All right, welcome back to another episode of the Dan Time Podcast. I'm Dan McArdle, glad to bring this production to you, and I'm happy to have you as a listener, as always. I hope you look forward to every week. I never tease what's coming next. I never say, hey, in 2 weeks, we're going to have this guest. So I always like for it to be a surprise. But today I'm really excited because we haven't done this in a while. There's been a couple comedians in the past, and I'm very excited to welcome Detroit's very own Dan Turco. He was voted 2023's best local comedian by Detroit Metro Times. He's been featured on various media outlets. I particularly enjoyed the episode he did with the Sanctioned by Stephanie podcast. And also, there's a good YouTube episode with, where I just wrote this down.
Was it Sitting Down with Stand-Ups?
Sitting Down with Stand-Ups, yeah.
Yeah.
But Dan, it's great to have you here today. How's everything going for you?
Going good. I want to issue a quick correction. I'm from the suburbs. I'm not from Detroit. I am firmly in the suburbs. I am not rich enough to live in the city of Detroit and be as white as I am.
Well, you've been an established comedian for close to a decade, is that right?
Yes.
You have a regular featured show?
Yeah, so I run a couple of shows. They're both biweekly. One is at Supernatural Brewing in Livonia, and the other is at Stella's Black Dog Tavern in beautiful downtown Plymouth, Michigan. So, Western Wayne County, right there.
Dan, I always like, another thing I enjoy about having different guests from different parts of the country or around the world is just putting the spotlight on some of these towns outside of major metro areas that people might be hearing for the first time. And they might be, you know, perhaps traveling in the Midwest or in the greater Detroit area. And it's kind of like, well, why don't we just throw a dart or make plans to check out that little community? Places like Ypsilanti, Livonia.
Mm-hmm. Good pronunciation there on Ypsilanti, by the way.
I was like, this is a 50-50 shot. And is it colloquially referred to as Ipsy sometimes?
Yes. Yeah, I went to college there. So I attended and graduated from the Eastern Michigan University in beautiful Ypsilanti, Michigan. It's a city so nice, they named it Ypsilanti.
Well, Dan, as always, with most people, I do enjoy checking out the bio, just kind of my self-guided tour, doing some research. And I understand as a kid and into your middle school, teenage years, kind of bounced around a little bit, grew up in the Michigan suburbs, then actually moved to Buffalo, where coincidentally my wife grew up, and outside Hartford, Connecticut, Boston area for high school, and then now back to your old stomping grounds. Do you think that some of that moving around has shaped your comedy, your material, obviously the person that you are?
You know, so I moved around a lot growing up. Like you said, I went to seven schools, more than average, I found. I was a retail. People are like, oh, were you in the Army? I'm like, no, my dad worked in retail. So I was a retail brat, not an Army brat. So I think that moving as often as I did forced me at a young age to kind of learn how to relate well to others and find something in common with people and be able to kind of connect that way. And I think not just comedy, but any art is dependent on your ability to connect with an audience. So whether that's, you know, just getting to know a coworker or getting to know somebody in a social situation or writing a set or making a movie or writing a book, you know, you want to be able to relate well and connect with other people. And in art in particular is that's the whole point, right, is to give people a glimpse into your point of view or your perspective. And in the case of comedy, to then make people laugh after they see that glimpse.
I've always had a lot of respect for people that can get up on stage with material that they've written, and as opposed to theater, nothing against people that pursue, that go in that direction, but you're going up there with your material in front of maybe a mixed bag of people. And Dan, do you sometimes get on stage and you can identify, okay, this guy's in it. He looks like he's having a great time. This is not going to be a problem. This set of eyes over here, they're kind of, this might be tough. Does anybody ever make you uncomfortable when you're up there on stage?
Yes and no. So I think any comedian worth their salt is paying attention to the show that they're on. So if I'm on a show, I am watching the comedians who are on before me. So I can see what they're doing and what's working and what's not. So if a comedian before me goes up and does a lot of dirty material and it goes well, okay, that means I can go, this crowd is here for a dirtier show. Or if a comic goes up and does dirty material and then bombs, I can say, oh, well, I know what jokes not to tell now. You know, because that's my goal is to make people laugh and put on the best show that I can. And that's one of the things I love about comedy, about stand-up, is it is a closed system. I can write the joke and I can tell the joke and I do all the editing and I do it is purely an individual endeavor that's a completely closed system. So it's not like theater where I'm saying somebody else's words, following the direction of another person, bouncing off other actors and actresses. Again, nothing wrong with that, but there are a lot of moving pieces. It's not like I'm in a band where I have to write a song that other people like or learn a song that other people wrote. For me, it's just, I think this is funny. Let's find out. Yes, no, maybe. And then I can go from there. To me, that is the instant gratification that comes out of that is my absolute favorite. You know, I don't have an editor. I don't have to. It's not like when you write a book and you send it to an editor and they give you notes. No, my notes are, did the audience laugh? Yes or no? You know, or in between, right? And then what can I do to make them laugh, to achieve that goal? Or can I not, and I have to write a new joke? So that is, for me, the thing that gets the juices flowing. As far as being uncomfortable, I'm way more uncomfortable if I know people in the audience. I can perform for hundreds of people, hundreds of people, very comfortably. But if like a coworker is there, I'll be like, oh, now you have expectations.
Right.
You know, oh yeah, a friend of mine from college is here. And it's like, oh, what if I'm not any good? Then what? So that's always, I've never been a stage fright guy. I got over that real quick. I only get nervous if there are people that have expectations in the audience.
You know, it's funny you mention that, even with this podcast, which is, I mean, I've been doing this weekly for over a year, but I don't really talk about it much with my close network of friends. I don't really discuss, you know, because I feel like I did promote it a little bit in the early going, but I don't talk. I've got some local groups that I'm a part of here. I don't really talk about it, but maybe I should. But I kind of relate a little bit where it's okay for the wider world to see this product and hear this product. But yeah, a little bit of that I could relate to.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I've been doing, you know, you can always tell when somebody's new at comedy because their friends and family still come out. And it's a shame that, you know, to do comedy long enough to be good at it, people will have long since stopped caring.
Right. There was a really good quote that I jotted down from that podcast episode with Stephanie, and I should know her last name.
Stephanie Ann, the Downriver Diva.
Yeah. You were talking about stamina, and it's important because it shows that you're still here because you haven't quit yet.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had some instances on the timeline here in the past decade where you thought, man, I don't know. Should I keep doing this? Have you ever questioned that you're still having fun with it? Have there been any bumps in the road? And it's kind of a two-part question, but I really appreciated how you also talked about your wife being there to support you and how I think that's very relatable where you have somebody in your corner. You don't need them to do other tasks for you so much or, I don't know, even review the material, but just having that support.
Yeah, for me, you know, we started dating. My wife and I started dating about 6 months before I started doing stand-up. And I'm like, you know, I'm thinking about trying stand-up comedy. And she's like, oh, that sounds, you know, she's very supportive. She's like, oh, that sounds cool. She has regrets. I think she has regrets about that sometimes. I think, and this is not an original thought, but it's certainly one that I think is true. I think a lot of people, when you watch a movie or you watch a TV show and you see a montage, you know, the training montage of somebody getting good at something quickly or getting stronger because they go to the gym, and it's a 60-second little montage that's to a song. That's a bad thing because it's not a montage. It's patience. You know, you have to be good at, to be good at something takes a long time, and you have to do it over and over and over again to get good at it. And that's the thing I think I've learned the most about myself and about the world and how people are in comedy is to get good at something, like it's patience. You have to be patient to gut something out long enough until you are good, until you get the opportunities, until you're good enough to capitalize on opportunities. And patience is a superpower. You know, I tell that to people, you know, you have to be patient and just wait and wait and wait and then give up hope and then keep waiting and then stuff will come for you. And that's when you find success or something resembling success.
I feel like you have to be comfortable doing all that work in the shadows, all that stuff that's not, you're not being photographed, you're not being congratulated, but you're, I hate using that phrase, putting in the work.
You have to be prepared to eat a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Because, especially in comedy, because comedy is kind of a unique art form in the sense that it has to be done in person. If I go home every night and play guitar in my basement for an hour, after several months, I will probably become pretty good at guitar. Whereas if I go home every night and tell jokes in my basement, I'm just a guy talking to laundry. So you have to, there is a level of exposure, a level of vulnerability that isn't for everybody, that you have to be prepared to constantly expose, you know, subject yourself to. And like I said, eat an absolute buffet of shit for years before you are good at comedy,
yeah.
before you're worth booking. And the people that are patient enough to get through that's a filter. It is a filter of, you know, people write their first, you know, 5-10 minutes and, you know, it's like, yeah, you've had your entire life to think of these jokes. Now what's your next 5 or 10 minutes? And some people never come up with that, and it really is patience. It's just it acts as a filter to keep people, you know, they realize they don't have it in them to keep, and that's fine. There's no judgment there. I mean, whatever keeps me doing this is keeping me doing it.
Have you ever had to give somebody advice that's maybe not what they want to hear? And it may not necessarily be a comic that you saw get up on stage and just bomb, and you say, look, I'm not sure. You need to, only you can make this decision if this is what you want to do. But have you ever had to have those conversations with people that need a lot of work and either find out if they're willing to put in the work or tell them, hey, it's okay. It's okay to not step into this arena.
So I am happy to, I am very happy to give people notes on their clips. So I'm on the board of the Motor City Comedy Festival, and one of my roles with that is to be in charge of gathering submission clips and overseeing the judgment of those clips. So I've watched an awful lot of stand-up comedy clips, and I'm very comfortable giving people notes about those clips, but I make sure that they agree up front that, like, listen, you're not going to be a dick to me if you don't like what I have to say. Like, I'm going to give you real professional notes that I think will make you a better person or a better performer. But if you react negatively to that, you know, that's not cool. That's not, you're coming to me. I'm never going to seek somebody out and be like, hey man, that set sucked. I'm not going to do that's not, you know, now maybe I'll be like, hey, that's a good punchline, or hey, try shifting the perspective, or, you know, the way that somebody would maybe bum someone a cigarette, I'll bum somebody, you know, hey, think of it this way. And,
right.
You know, or hey, are you comfortable with me giving you a note? But I'll never tell somebody not to do. I'll never tell somebody not to do this. I think that it's definitely something that it's been very enriching to my life, and I believe that it can be enriching to other people's lives as well. But I certainly will tell people, hey, you know, what you're doing on stage is kind of risky. Consider changing it, or hey, this clip you sent me is a bad clip, and let's talk about why. Let's talk about what you can do to make this better and make you more, you know, more marketable to bookers.
And you mentioned the Motor City Comedy Festival. This is about, was it 7 years running? 6, 7 years?
It'll be this was just our 8th year.
Okay. This was took place September 19th to the 22nd this year. Talk yep. about this most recent festival and the success you guys had.
It was a lot of fun. So we, this is the 8th year. This is my 2nd year on the board, or my 2nd festival on the board. And we had a great festival this year. We had comics from around the country and Canada come out as our featured comedians. And then we, of course, had our headliners. This year, our headliners were Mike Cannon, Liz Mealy, Carmen Lynch, Ian Fidance, T-Barb from Detroit, and Craig Conant. So it was a great group of headliners. And we had some truly fabulous comedians from around the country. We had 370 something submissions, and you know, to get the top 30 or so of that, you know, we had people from Victoria, British Columbia. We had people from, you know, New York City, from Los Angeles, Chicago, Pittsburgh, Minneapolis. I mean, Tulsa. I mean, we strive to be a nationwide festival, and give people from around the country the opportunity to come here, see what the city is all about, see what the area is all about, see what the scene is all about. And I think it was a great fest. It was great. It was a good time.
And this took place over or across three different venues: Detroit House of Comedy, Detroit Shipping mm-hmm. Company, and the Independent Comedy Club.
Yep.
Do those venues kind of move around year to year?
Nope. Those have been our three for the last couple of festivals. Has been those three. So the Detroit House of Comedy, it's on Woodward, right downtown. The Independent Comedy Club is in Hamtramck, which is a city in the city of Detroit, and is affiliated with Planet Ant, which is a fabulous improv theater if you're a fan of improv and you're in Michigan. And then Detroit Shipping is kind of an offshoot of 313 Comedy. That's a Sunday night showcase. And Detroit Shipping Company is a food hall and performing arts space, amongst other things. And just a great, great venue and a great partner for us. All of them are great partners.
And Dan, I want to call out the website, mm-hmm. MotorCityComedyFestival.com. Also, really love and appreciate the festival flyer, Alyssa Clash. It's mm-hmm. kind of a...
She's great.
Very gooey theme. A lot of texture, embellishment, really fun stuff going on. If you guys haven't seen this or heard about this, go visit the website. It looks like a chili dog.
We the local, every place has their own local food, and for the uninitiated, the local food in Detroit or Metro Detroit is the Coney dog.
Yeah.
Which is a hot dog with a beef chili on it. A beef all meat chili. So it's like a hot dog sauce.
Dan, that reminds me, you've got is it a family sausage recipe, or there's a sausage connection there?
So we are
runs deep.
My family is Turco is an Italian name. We're Italian, and that is our family thing is making sausage. So we do that out. You know, we'll have friends over or whatever. Do that a couple times a year, and you know, put that together.
Yeah, and I also ask because nearby here, we've got a local sausage festival that runs every year. And
I'll have to come out to that. I'm a fan of the tubed porks, the tubed meats.
Down here, or Kaneka sausage is pretty popular, and I'm guessing it originated. We're on the northern Gulf Coast, so pretty close to Alabama, and mm-hmm. there's I believe it's made in Kaneka County.
Mm-hmm.
I've always loved, I'm a sausage guy. If somebody wants you know, like a Hawaiian pizza with pepperoni or ham and pineapple, I like to go sausage and pineapple.
Nice.
I don't know about your feelings there on pizza toppings.
I'm old fashioned. I like just good old pepperoni and sausage pizza. But no, I love the customization that sausage provides, because you can put anything in. So it's like, I want this spicier, you can just add more spice to it, or I want it sweeter, and you can add you know, splash of red wine or what have you. So it's a lot of fun. It's gross. Like once you get over, you have to get over the horror of what you're doing. But once you get over that, it's actually very good.
Now, Dan, back in June, you recorded at Ziggy's for a forthcoming comedy release. Is that right?
Yes.
Is there a date that you can announce at this time, or is this still to be determined?
Still to be determined. The editing for that has gone longer than I had hoped. So I'm hoping, I had initially hoped that it would come out before the end of the year, but now it's looking closer to Q1 of next year.
Well, folks, and I'll also put this in the show notes and probably say it again at the end of the episode, but whatever platform you're on, if it's Facebook, by the way, Dan, I just love the way that this is titled. Dan Turco thinks he's funny. Very memorable. That's where you find him on Facebook. I'm Dan Splaining on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you're on some other outlets as well.
That's it. I am not the best at social media.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, that's you can find me on Facebook and the Gram, and you know, we've got the pages of the shows that I run as well, the Comedy Night at Stella's and Comedy Night at Supernatural, and then the Motor City Comedy Festival. But as far as myself personally, I try to be a little less active on social media.
I think it can get a little out of control. It can be a pretty big time suck if you let it. So I'm with you on that. Dan, I know you mentioned some of your favorite comics growing up on some of these other episodes you've been on, like Dimitri Martin, Jim Gaffigan. By the way, how cool is it to see Gaffigan? I don't know if he's all over Netflix or Hulu.
I think his newest one is on Hulu.
He's one of those Comedy Central alums. I want to say, I don't know if he had a show or he had some appearances back in the day.
Yeah, I remember seeing him. I remember in high school, you know, him being one of the common, you know, half hours that you would see on Comedy Central.
Yeah, that was a different time. People don't really watch Comedy Central like we did when we came home from school.
And Comedy Central doesn't have that. Their programming is different now too. I mean, it's, you know, so I'm 35, and I find that, you know, when you talk to somebody about consuming stand-up, you know, maybe they think of a Comedy Central special. Maybe they think of, if they're a little older, HBO. You know, more recently, you know, Netflix, to their credit, has been buying up specials left and right and publishing a lot of them. And that's a wonderful that they're doing that, because they're definitely filling kind of a hole in the market that Comedy Central kind of left behind, was that they stopped producing quite as many of these, you know, the premium blend and things like that. They don't do that as much anymore. So, you know, you've got these other sources, and then you've got things like YouTube and Vimeo, and, you know, to get it even smaller, you have things like TikTok or Instagram, where there's certainly a democratization of the art form. You know, the gatekeeping of the big publishers isn't there. You know, some people definitely run into a can versus should, you know, should you be doing this or can you do this? These are different things.
Dan, how do you feel about how people consume comedy, and they want those quick bursts of laughs on the reels, and 16 seconds later, they're on to something else to make them laugh, and 26 seconds later, they're scrolling again. It is what it is, but obviously the long form comedy show is not out of here, it's not gone, but is there a certain audience that you almost can't reach with that hour long special?
I don't think so. I think there are certainly comedians that operate better in the short form. Nationally, you can look at people like Dimitri Martin or Stephen Wright or the late Mitch Hedberg. You know, more recent, you know, Brad Wenzel in Detroit, Emmett Morrison in Ottawa are guys that are brilliant, short feature, you know, short form artists. Noah Chapp in Detroit's also a genius about it. I think that if you want to go, but at the same time though, if you want to talk longer form jokes, people like John Mulaney and Mike Birbiglia, Dave Chappelle are all very successful comedians doing longer form material, story based with plenty of punchlines, with plenty of jokes, but material that is more meandering and not so short that you could see it as a reel. And I think as long as it's good, you'll find the audience. You know, if you are a good comedian and you're writing short form stuff, people will find you. If you're a good comedian and you're writing long form stuff, people will find you.
Well, that's very encouraging because, I mean, I can read a book and where you got to get 3 pages in before you start belly laughing from a book. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of foreign to some people. That's fine. But yeah, I really kind of like those meandering stories where the comic's like, I'm going to take you for a ride for about 45 seconds or 2.5 minutes. And you're going to lose it at the end. But, you know, that's comedy to me, or comedy that appeals to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly risk and reward associated with that style of comedy. That payoff, you know, if you're going to take 2 minutes to tell me a joke, that payoff better be worth 2 minutes because, you know, the thing that somewhat, you know, laughs per minute is something people bring up where how often are you, you know, how many punchlines are in your set? How many laughs are you getting, you know, per minute or per your set? So, you know, when you look at people like Birbiglia or Mulaney or Chappelle or Gaffigan does it, where they're doing a story, there's still punchlines in that story. So maybe they're telling you a 5-minute story, but there's still 6 or 7 punches in it.
Yeah.
You know, there's 6 or 7 points where even though the story is still ongoing, you're still getting that punctuation of a laugh as it's going. And that's difficult to teach. Or difficult to learn might be a better way to phrase that.
Yeah.
I've certainly seen plenty of comedians starting out who, yeah, I'm going to get out and be a storyteller and I'm going to tell a 5-minute joke with one punchline. And it's like, man, you wasted a lot of time. You should have included a lot more jokes in that story because while that's a funny anecdote, that's not a good comedy set. Like you need to learn, you know, when you watch and you got to sit down and watch it with that lens of like, oh, that's a punchline. Oh, that's a punchline. Oh, that's, and even though it's still one thematic idea, you know, there's a lot of punches. A great person to watch on this would be John Mulaney and the Street Smarts bit from, I think it was on Kid Gorgeous, where he's talking about the police officer who visited his school. That is a long story, but it is filled with a lot of punches and a lot of points of like, okay, we're still on the same track, but there's a laugh each time.
I think that actually might be my sweet spot where I think you described it accurately. I remember being 21, maybe right, just old enough to get into a comedy club where I have a brother of mine that's about 1.5 years younger. So maybe I was 23, but mm-hmm. we got to see Bob Schimmel, Robert Schimmel, the late Robert Schimmel. And I still have one of his old CDs. And I'm remembering now that he was really great about telling kind of one story, but like you said, it's kind of got all those little punches in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I took a public speaking class in college, and, you know, I remember one of the lessons was like, hey, when you're reading, you know, when you're writing something that's being prepared, or, you know, when you're writing something that's being prepared for you, use a period is like a stop sign and a comma is like a yield sign or you know, a slow or like a yellow light, like slow down. And, you know, you really have to think of it as, okay, here is a stop. You stop to let people laugh, right? Like you're slowing down to let people laugh.
Yeah. And now in the early days when you were still, because if you've been doing this 9 or 10 years, that's pretty young, 24, 25. Were there some times where you had kind of a scheduled pause and then you would hit it? And the room was kind of silent, maybe a couple cackles here, you know, in the back. But do you ever, I guess every comic goes through that, right? And then you just fine tune it.
Yeah, you figure it out. You know, you write savers, right? You know, you come up with a joke. I have a handful of one-liners that if I say a joke that just does not go over, I'll be like, okay, well, here's this one-liner that I know will work. You know, here's something tried and, you know, tried and tested that, okay, that you guys forgot I'm funny. Okay, quick, let me remind you that I'm funny. Here's a real joke. Okay, let's palate cleanse and move on to the next bit.
That's great. You've got it in the arsenal. Because, Dan, I'm, this might, and forgive me if I'm asking questions that are like, well, yeah, of course that goes on, but if you run, you're going over the same material one night to one audience, and then the next night or during the same week, same set, and you're getting a totally different reaction. Does that happen still sometimes now?
It happens in the same night. It happens in the same night sometimes. Where, yeah, ask anybody who works a club in, and, you know, oh, yeah, the early Saturday show was really digging it. What about late Saturday? Well, the early one was good. You know, I mean, that happens all the time, you know, and you always have to be tinkering. You know, you always have to think, okay, what could I have done differently? What could I have done better? You know, did this, you know, was it the order of the jokes? Was it the material? Was it the delivery? You know, you should always be considering, you know, what you can do to get better, and you know, what can you do to improve? You always want to do that.
How about this, Dan? I'm trying to think of a question that maybe hasn't been asked. So every comic deals with hecklers from time to time, or some version of a heckler, or just someone that doesn't realize where they are and they need to enjoy the show. But have you ever had somebody that is so inebriated and you're almost, and I don't want you to call out any venue that you've performed at, but you're almost thinking, who is this server that's been continuing to serve this guy? Or I don't know if they're going up to the bar and back, and you're like, you're kind of directing your anger at the establishment.
I will never, you never direct your anger at the establishment. No, you never would do that. Because here's the thing, who's going to ask those people to leave?
Yeah.
I was at a show a few weeks ago, and there were some people, I believe I had been told, I don't know if this is true, I had been told that they had attended the Detroit Lions game. And the Detroit Lions play at Ford Field, which is about one block away from the Detroit House of Comedy. So I was on a show there, so they had attended this game, and I had been told that they were too drunk to get into the Red Wings game. Because the Detroit Red Wings also play about a block away from the Detroit House of Comedy. So they decided, if we're too drunk to go to a hockey game, let's go to a comedy show. And there were these people that had, and somehow they had been able to get from the bar a case of High Noon. I'm like, how did you buy a case of beer? How did that happen? And they were talking during the show, and members of the audience were responding to them, telling them to shut up. And eventually the manager got the staff and he kicked them out. And I think that's, you know, you don't talk during, don't heckle. It's, you know, the idea of the person in the back getting up yelling, "Hey man, you suck." That's not something that happens.
Yeah.
But more often than not, it'll be people that are just overserved and need to clear out. You know, shouldn't be here anymore. They should go get a cup of coffee, get a ride home, and get the hell out of here.
Speaking of Detroit sports, just real quickly, are you a fan of all the teams? Being Dan time, I gotta name drop Dan Campbell. He's got to be a pretty popular guy around there.
The Detroit Lions are like the Cubs in baseball, but less charming. There was a great writer put it best. Lauren Thiessen on Defector, she's like, there's nothing meaner you can say about the Detroit Lions than just reading their Wikipedia page word for word. And that's true. Like being a Lions fan, the Lions have all of the suffering of a 19th century Russian novel with none of the dignity or gravitas. Like, it just, it's terrible. And now, just recently, they've become a great team that everybody loves, and it's, nobody here knows what to do. We have no idea what this is like. This has never happened to any of us. The last time they were good was in the 50s. We are so far out of our element on how to deal with a winning football team. I was saying to my wife is a Steelers fan. Her father's from Pittsburgh originally. And I'm like, man, football is a lot easier to watch when you whoop ass. Like, yeah. Holy shit. Like, is this how other teams feel? Other fan bases?
Yeah. I mean, when you're always losing, and I've been a Cubs fan since I was 10 years old. So when they would just barely squeak into the playoffs, it was like there was this expectation that it's just not going to happen. It can't happen. And you'd sense that on TV, or I've been to some playoff games, and it's just like holding your breath. And then they lose, and you're like, oh, yeah, well, of course they're going to lose.
the Detroit Lions are the nexus of all human suffering. So for them to be successful like this is just so bizarre. It's so weird, especially because it's coming off of, you know, for a city with four sports teams, you know, the Big Four, all four teams have been bad for the last decade. The Tigers have been bad for a decade. The Pistons have been bad for a decade. The Red Wings have been bad for a decade. The Lions have been bad forever. So we are starving for a team that's good. And that it's the Lions is just that much better.
Dan, I've got a story. I don't know. I'm a little bit older, but not by much. But do you remember the older Cecil Fielder? There was like Cecil Fielder with the Brewers. But his dad?
That was Prince Fielder, his son Prince.
Or Prince.
Played for the Tigers briefly. He played for the Tigers for a few years, too.
That's right. A story with Cecil Fielder. I was not at the old Tiger Stadium, but as a young kid, I was, I think, at Fenway. It was a Tigers-Red Sox game. Mm-hmm. And I had a ball ready, or a baseball. No, it was a baseball card, standing right there by Cecil Fielder. And he just couldn't get to me. He had to run off and get ready for the game. I sent that card in the mail to him, to the Tigers. And I got it back. I sent a self-addressed stamp envelope, and I got a signed card back from Cecil. But so he was always one of my favorite players after that. And, of course, those home run moonshots. Do you have a favorite all-time, let's just say the Tigers? Is there a player, past or present, that's your favorite?
There's a lot. I mean, the great thing about – so the Tigers, the old owner, Mike Ilitch, he was dying, so he was spending money on free agents to try to win a World Series before he died. And he did not, unfortunately. But, you know, I loved, you know, everybody loves Verlander. I love Verlander. You know, I like Ian Kinsler a lot when he played for the Tigers. I liked Brandon Inge a lot when he played for the Tigers. Kind of a hot take there. I liked Curtis Granderson a lot. You know, the Tigers, when they were good, you know, and they were spending money on free agents, it's kind of like how the Lions are now and how the Red Wings were in the 90s and early aughts, and how the Pistons were in the early aughts of, like, yeah, here's a team with a lot of personalities. You know, here's a team where everybody has a different guy. You know, the Pistons, you know, I liked Sheed. Other people liked Ben. Other people liked Rip. You know, with the Red Wings, you know, I liked Iserman. You know, other people liked Sergei or Brett Hull. You know, and with the Lions now, it's like, you know, I love Brian Branch. Other people like Hutch or Sewell or you know. So it's teams with a lot of personalities.
Just seems like a great sports town.
Oh, it definitely is. And in college, too. Pro and college out here. You know, we've got a minor league soccer team that sells out. I mean, we like, we show, Metro Detroit shows out for sports entertainment events.
Now, I could go off on many different ends here. Need to wrap up eventually. I'm really bad about rabbit hole questions and just, but on Dan Time, I have, you know, some of those oddball questions. One thing I wanted to cover, because I like this band and I like similar bands. I grew up with a long-haired metalhead brother who sang in a band. He played guitar. And I understand are you an Iron Maiden, like a big fan?
Yeah. Yes.
Because I heard a reference to that, I think, on that episode with Stephanie. I'm like, oh, man, I got to ask about Maiden.
Yeah, I love Maiden. They're great.
I have not seen them live, but
they're great. Like, for a bunch of guys in their 60s, they can throw some heat. Yeah, they're fabulous. I started getting into them in high school. It's funny, I'm a big punk guy, and they're one of the small handful of metal bands that I'm really into.
They, you know, Iron Maiden just kind of has that special sauce. I don't know that other bands, like, there's not many fans of punk rock that would like other bands like Saxon. You know, there's some of the, or Wasp or something like that, but maybe not the best references, but Maiden kind of just cuts through, kind of the same way Motorhead did. Mm-hmm. But I have not gotten to see them live. I like some of Bruce's solo material. Mm-hmm. I remember I was working in a record store when The Chemical Wedding came out. I bought that. I still like that album and some of that stuff from the 90s, but yeah, that's... My brother played it all the time. I had to ride to school with him and hear all of his whole catalog. And so we would jam, I mean, The Trooper, Hallowed Be Thy Name, all those songs. Dan, anything that we haven't covered today that you'd like to promote? I'm really excited to just bring some attention to your career, what you're doing out there, and anything that we've left on the table.
Not really. I don't think so. I think this is a good, no, thank you for having me.
Another thing that I wanted to mention, this was really special to me, being a dad. Maybe we can cover this for 2 minutes or so, but I understand that you, any of your club performances, the money that you make there, you put into a special account for your son, for his college education or something along those lines.
Yeah. Yeah, that's or at least that's what I tell my wife. And now my daughter.
But no, I love that you kind of have the eye on his future. And anyway, Dan, it's been great having you today. Maybe we can talk again after the album release, maybe in 2025 sometime. Would love to have you back on Dan Time.
Yeah, no, thank you. I would love to come back.
And folks, again, and I appreciate this. I think you can too. He's not everywhere on social media, and I don't think you have to be these days. I always tell people, create some mystique. But you can find Dan, keep up with him on Instagram. I'm Dan Splaining. And Facebook, Dan Turco thinks he's funny. But it's been a wonderful episode here at Dan Time with comedian Dan Turco. Thanks for being here, Dan. Best of luck to you, and right up on the holiday, so I hope you have a great holiday season as well.
Yeah, you too, man.
All right, folks, we'll have a great rest of the week, and we'll see you next Sunday on the Dan Time Podcast. Thank you, Dan Turco.